tu sahana bhunaktu sahavīryam karavāvahai tejasvinavadhitamastu mā vidviṣāvahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Oh, so all these numberings and all that, this what we're going through now, this is Chaitanya Shikshamrita.
This section? Yeah, the Jiva Goswami.
Impersonal. Well, I mean, that's the footnote, but this part's impersonal knowledge.
Yeah, this is all Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Okay. All these headings are Chaitanya Shikshamrita.
Now, so what would you suggest is now, if we're going to do these two,
yeah.
Do we do, which one do you think is better for the morning one, which one's better for the evening?
They're roughly equal. I would think that the evening is a bit more technical. The Tava Vivek subject matter is relatively basic compared to
the Okay, evening. So let's keep the Tava Vivek in the evening and we'll do the Shikshamrita in the morning.
Okay.
Sure. That way then we'll get through also more.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, but this now is anyway, it seems that part of this is going to be Shikshamrita anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so now going through is what their idea. So all the main branches of Mayavada agree on these six principles. But details, then we saw, then there's a problem between, I mean, starting from 63, bottom of 63, top of 64, those six principles. So they are agreed on by all schools of Mayavada. So you have one, there's no substance except Brahman. What is perceived is not true. It is conditional perception or conditional reality. Right? But that leaves it open to say that it's absolute, illusion, or it's the conditioned perception is illusion. So you can get both the vivarta or the vikara. Right? Vikara will be that it's real, but your conditioned perception of it is false. And then the vivarta will be it's not real at all. Right? There is no, so that defines then the material world and means Brahman, the material world, the living entity, basically. Two, there is no individual soul that exists, only as a transformation of Brahman or illusion. Right? Means that, yeah. So they'll either say it's Brahman is transformed or it's become,
yeah.
It's just illusion that there is there. But then still you have to get the element of covering of the soul. So covering of Brahman, but then in covering Brahman, you don't actually cut it into parts. So is one of them more connected with Vikara and the other one with Vivarta, or you can mix and match as you please, depending upon the particular combination of the modes?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So now that defines the soul, right? Because we're going through Upanishad kind of understanding. So that was God, then the soul. Three, the world is false. That's the material world, right? Then we have here, four, when the soul gives up his false identity, he becomes Brahman. Right, so that's your process. And five, liberation from illusion is the final goal. That's your prayojana. Now six, Brahman is without qualities or energies. Then that would be part of one. Right, in other words, the definition of God.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Brahman is without qualities or energies, and there's no substance except Brahman. So that would be your first point. Second is the jivas, third is the material world, fourth is your process, five is your ultimate goal. So then, you know, gives it very clear like that. That's what I'd like to get, you know, for all the world religions.
Yeah,
something
yeah.
clear like that. So, and then they're basic, like we have here, the different ones. What are the basic thoughts or schools within that?
Mm-hmm.
But we start like that. So Christianity would have something like that.
Yes.
You know, it may not be so succinct, because this is Vedic, and they're used to, especially Mayavadis, using aphorisms. So they can get it down to a one-sentence, half-sentence kind of a thing. But I'm sure the Christians, they probably need, you know, a bit more, a few sentences or a short paragraph to define
Yeah.
You know, some of them.
Yeah.
You know, like that. The new Judaism. You know, every real religion, mm-hmm. and even all the philosophy. So whatever's talked about in here, in the Tattva Vivek, it would be interesting to get.
You yeah. know,
like
the outline.
That. Yeah. So all those five levels. You know, mm-hmm. how does the because then that gives them more of a thing. Because you say, well, how does that put together? Where does that fit? Is that,
yeah.
you know, the schools, the atheistic immoralist, then the atheistic moralist,
yeah.
then the theistic moralist,
yeah.
you know, because that will then basically bring in all your world religions or most yeah. of them. Then your, what is it?
Theistic moralist?
No, the theistic moralist. Then.
After that is the impersonal knowledge.
So the impersonalist, the various schools of yeah. impersonalism. And then you have the Vaishnava, which is the Dasamul. So then the others like that, if those are all defined like that, then that itself would be a very nice, you know, little chart, a little paper. It doesn't have to get into the whole, you know, like history or anything like that. That just defines, so you can tell
yeah,
what it is.
Philosophically.
Yeah.
That would you want to include the Saddarshan in there? Because he divides up some of the Saddarshans belong in the impersonal category, some belong in the affirmative, you know, a mentality.
Yeah. Okay.
But they all slot into those.
They all karma and gyan
yeah.
also.
Yeah.
Because basically Jaimini's the karma and everybody else is
yeah.
the impersonal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they could yeah, they would fit into that, because otherwise what goes in there, because in the Western
yeah.
philosophy they don't really have anything. So
yeah.
you're just going to get those schools, basically, in Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
maybe Jainism gets thrown in for
mm-hmm.
fun.
Because okay.
I think they're impersonalist
right.
on that level also. So then you'd have, and then most of your Western philosophies are these lower level ones. Generally, your atheistic immoralism or atheistic moralism,
mm-hmm.
basically in there, with some touches of the other
mm-hmm.
flavor. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that. You know, they lean more towards karma, more towards yang.
Right.
Like that. You don't really get a real path of yang. So it's something like that. Then it's basically all these things. And then you throw in also the, you know, the polytheistic, the pantheistic, and, you know, wherever they fall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as he defines them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the Panchopasana. You know, whatever is the forms, that anything that fits into all these categories, then
yeah.
you can do it probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Because then those are all the philosophies that come off of it, so that would be the practical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could also have, you know, the definitions, I guess, to start the thing so they understand the five levels is the anamoy, pranamoy, like that, and then pratyaksha, praroksha, aparoksha,
yeah.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have those kind of elements. So you can see is mm-hmm. that, because sometimes the philosophy is actually situated in one place, but it has elements of another.
Yeah.
That's what gives it that little bit of difference.
Yeah.
You know, like you can be a karma, be doing all the karmakanda rituals, but your point is liberation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you can be very renounced and everything, but your point is the heavenly planet.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of get. You know, so however he
yeah.
kind of identifies all that, it'd be
yeah,
a very
yeah.
nice
a little spectrum.
Yeah, we give it very. She says, "Don't we have something to refer
yeah.
to always? You know, consistent."
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so only Brahman, no soul. When a person says anything contrary to normal perception, if he cannot prove it, he will be considered mad. Common sense tells us that the world is real. The self is infinitesimal. So this is all Bhaktivinoda Thakur in
mm-hmm.
Sikshamrita.
Yes.
Okay. Self, the world is real. The self is infinitesimal. Okay. Okay, so then common sense tells us the world is real and the self is real, though the self is infinitesimal. There is a creator, maintainer, and protector. Who can propose that individuals do not exist, that everything they perceive has no existence, but that within them is a substance, by taking shelter of which they will understand the illusory nature of the perception? So in other words, you can still get the element of being freed from, because their goal is to be, their idea is to be, the Mayavadi is to become free from the misery of the material world. So they've taken that the solution is merging in Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of getting out of the material world is noble. But the idea that the solution is merging in Brahman, that's fallen short of the, you know, it would be like, the house, all the relatives are over, it's turned into a riot, it's insane, so you want to get out of it. So you leave your house and then you go out in the street and then there's another riot happening out there. So it's not actually, you know.
What is the solution to that, scenario?
Then you go to the park. Then in the park, you get bored. Then being bored, then you'll think of, well, which would be more fun, the riot or going back to the house? But, yeah. So then that's what happens. So that's the problem, is that the solution, whatever is the social environment, is an annoyance, so they try to find that peaceful.
Yeah.
You know, go out into the woods, go on some retreat, go on, you know, just go for a walk, go for a drive, but then they get bored.
Yeah.
You know, because the point is if it's so great, they keep doing it, but then, you know, oh, it's time to go back home. So that means home's not that bad. It was just driving you a little nuts, but, you know, basically it's okay.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. So that's the thing, is what they're looking for, Vaishnavism has. But it just takes a little bit more surrender. It means, in other words, they're willing to go through all the physical trauma of their renunciation and all that and cut off all relationships as long as they can be God. You know, it's a fair trade, you know, like that. You know, but we're saying give up that and then you'll get even beyond Brahmananda. So that they don't want to give up. So the attachments to that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, logically, the Vaishnavism and gets them what they want. The karmis want to be happy through activity. We're also giving them a solution. You perform your activity, but for the Lord. So you don't get the material reactions, so you don't get the material problems. So then, again, you situate yourself in the spiritual world eternally. Because then, even they do go to the heavenly planets, it's temporary. They have to come back here again and then work hard. Well, here, you've worked hard for one life, you get an eternal reward. Well, there they worked hard for one life and they go to the heavenly planets for however hard they worked. 10,000 years, 100,000 years, maybe a few million or trillions, or if you're, you know, really big and on the level of Brahma and that, but that generally takes a while. And then, but still, it has an end. So for the same trouble, you get more, right? It means you get eternal happiness instead of temporary happiness. And the other one, you get liberated, you get the eternal liberation, but you get a happiness way beyond.
Yeah.
You know?
You can even say that the trouble in our path, it's part of Vaidhi. After you attain Ruchi and all of them.
It's not so much of a problem.
It's not trouble.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just like, yeah. Yeah. There's anything's like that. Anything that someone says that they like to do.
Yeah.
Is trouble for someone else.
Yeah.
You know, just like, let's say, you know, a class of persons, you know, generally nicely situated, or okay situated, generally a little educated, have money, have facility, are used to something a little bit out of the ordinary, they go skiing.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, it's freezing cold up there. You're stuck in a cabin with all kinds of people, and if you don't like them, you're stuck with them.
Yeah.
And it's all dependent on the weather. You can get out there, freeze. You could hit an avalanche, get buried, and die. You know, unless the Saint Bernard comes along. You know, and so it's just, you know, or you can run into a tree or rocks. Or, you know, all kinds of things. It means everybody that I knew as a kid that skied had broken something. You know, but they take it as part of the normal thing. You know. So anything always has that. No matter what your happiness is, it always has an element that has a negative. So the devotional, but the reason you don't notice is because of taste. So if you get spiritual taste or ruchi, then any of the problems in the material world don't bother you. Not just the ones that you have taste for. Because you have taste for the eternal that's beyond the material. So instead of just, you know, the one thing within the material world that you have taste for, you don't mind it, though it's giving you trouble. The rest of the world then bothers you. But here is that the the taste is in the devotional service, so the obstacle is not just the obstacle within that area of taste. Mm-hmm. The obstacle is the material world. So then the material world doesn't bother you. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Who can propose that individuals do not exist, that everything they perceive has no existence, but that within them is a substance, by taking shelter of which they will understand the illusory nature of their perception? If an individual who is illusory himself makes a proposal, that proposal and all other proposals are also false. But it means if you don't exist, then what's the meaning of your proposals on how you're going to get happy? Right? You know, it's all an illusion, so it doesn't have any meaning. Drunkards often make such claims, thinking themselves kings and acting accordingly. Undoubtedly, they also think they are God. Right? But it's a matter, everyone will just say he's a drunkard. So. There are various types of error, but the main ones are those caused by erroneous logic, mental aberration, and intoxication. By erroneous logic, man's intelligence can generate the worst mistakes. Right? Because in other words, you logically go through, means if you just spoke by feelings, the interesting thing about the mind is it accepts and rejects. It doesn't have to put out, and it gets a taste from that. That's what the mind does. Right? So the point is you're accepting something, you're rejecting something. That's where all your feelings come from. So if something is very intense in your mind, then accepting it many times, rejecting it many times works. Right? Have you ever had the experience that there's so many things going on in your head and that I got to write this down, and you write it down, there's only one thing? It's just you've looked at it from 10 different angles.
Yeah.
So you're not logically going through it, so you don't really come up with something too crazy. I mean, it's crazy, but by logic you can point out the thing and it's very obvious.
Yeah.
But when you use the intelligence, then you can generate all these analytical little things that then are much more difficult to see their what's wrong with them. Mm-hmm. The pantheists of Europe are of this sort. Spinoza was the perfection of such thought. Spinoza? Where is he from?
I think he's Spanish.
Okay, yeah. The theosophist philosophy, which is spread in America and elsewhere, is also a Advaitavad. So Spinoza was a theosophist.
No, he was in the pantheist category.
Okay, pantheist. And then there's the theosophist.
Yeah.
So pantheist means that God and just in nature or something.
Yeah, God is all pervasive.
Okay, but they only see the nature aspect.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Whatever opinions the learned scholars propound, the common people with no discrimination generally accept. In India, Dattatreya, Astavakra, and Shankara have in different ages spread the same thought in slightly different forms. In modern times, other than Vaishnavism, everything is along Advaitavad lines. Almost all the Brahmana families hold this view. Right? So basically, because what you have left in Brahmanas, it's not necessarily that Brahmanas because of their qualifications. They're generally Brahmanas just because they're born in the families. Mm-hmm. Right? So then it's natural, then they're only being connected to the rules. You know, so the Smarta kind of line or the Kasa Goswami kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yes?
This Dattatreya, Astavakra, Shankara, they preach the same philosophy?
He says basically the same philosophy, in other words, the Advaitavad, but in different ages. You know? I guess Dattatreya goes back, he's the oldest.
Yes.
Like that, because he's, Dattatreya, isn't he Archie?
Anasuya.
And Atri. Yeah, their son.
Yeah.
And then Astavakra is later, but then it's still, they were doing big yagyas and stuff. Varuna was doing a yagya. So Astavakra's father was taken by Varuna's men. Mm-hmm. But Varuna's either the head priest or the prime minister or something. He came as this Brahmin and came and settled himself in this kingdom that was, I think, right next to the ocean. And then he was a great scholar, and he put out, they put out these things challenging everybody else, and I guess there were big rewards, and you know, all kinds of things, just to attract big scholars. And I'm not sure that they didn't even target certain scholars. So all these scholars came and debated with him, and whoever was defeated then was drowned in the ocean. Like that. And so then Astavakra, I think when he was 8, then he was trying to find out what happened to his father. When he found out the details, then he and his little friend, they went to the big city there to argue with that pundit. And so Astavakra, he defeated him. And then you know, so then what's supposed to happen? It just says, well, he used to be drowned like everybody else. So when they went down to the ocean, then I think by that time Varuna's yagya was over, so all those Brahmins came out. So they had just put him into the ocean. And then Varuna's men are there greeting them, taking him, you know, like that. So they just one needed priests for his yagya. Like that. So, but in any case, he was a big Advaita body.
And Dattatriya was by incarnation of God.
Sure, exactly. Wasn't he the one who was all three?
Yes.
He was, yeah. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva all together, because they said, prayed to all three of them, O Supreme. It was kind of like, you can't tell the difference. You know? So then, I guess he comes out as all three, but can't tell the difference. Right? You know, so it's consciousness of the parents, constantly like that. The reason for such popularity is that any mistaken process in the world can take shelter of Advaita Vada and thus not get destroyed. Because if you just say it's all Brahman, it's beyond, you know, what you can actually understand. And there is no actually bona fide parampara to actually understand. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing to clear. So it leaves a very nice, universal, how do you say, kind of illusory, what do you say, philosophical concept that any materials can relate to.
Yes.
Obviously, everyone can agree on nothing.
Yes. Yeah. Anyone who wants to worship an animal as God can take advantage of Advaita philosophy, right? Because Brahma, everything's Brahman. In order to justify the process, they will quote Advaita Vada, which says that by concentrating on animal as God, eventually the heart will become purified and steady. Then the mind can engage itself in non-dual substance. Because of such practical usage, everyone takes Advaita Vada as their savior. So basically, saying is that any other philosophy other than Vaishnavism is Advaita. Just like we were saying is that there's, 13 different lines apasampradayas, but technically there's only sahajya. It's just different forms of sahajya. So in the same way is that, yes, so there's there's the bona fide line, you know, in parampara, and then there is sahajya. You know, so in the same way in philosophy, there's Vaishnavism, and then there's Advaita Vada. It's just that you have so many forms of Advaita Vada, like that. However, they do not investigate the basic faults in the philosophy. Those who take Bhakti Vada as their life and soul with proper discrimination take leave of Advaita Vada and cultivate the natural path of bhakti. That's interesting. I've never heard that term used, Bhakti Vada. You know, you just hear Vaishnavism. Yeah. So Advaita Vada and Bhakti Vada.
And Vada means
philosophy, yeah.
So the
Vada or philosophy of bhakti, or Advaita, the philosophy of Advaita. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Yeah. Mother-in-law Vada.
Right? We start a club sometime with the bhakti Vadas.
Bhakti. Are you a bhakti Vadas?
Can you say some karma Vada?
Yeah. But those are all just branches. So in other words, when we say there's karma and jnana, it's all ultimately Advaita. You know, like that. Because that's the whole idea, is that one would say, no, why would that be? What's the original concept? Right? How do we get ourselves here? The original sin. Right? Well, we want to be God. I'm the controller and I'm joyous, so that means it's a great divine. You understand? Then from there's those who want to be God more on the controller aspect. That would be your jnanis. And those who want to be more on the enjoyment concept, that's your karmas. But it's the whole idea is the jnanis want to enjoy, but the focus is on, you know, jnana, while the karmis, you know, they want proper knowledge and want security, right? Because then the Advaita Vada is that it's, you know, you have that eternal element, you know, so it's secure like that, while the enjoyment aspect you may not be so sure. So that's why it's Brahma Ananda, because Brahman is stable, steady. That's why it's so important to it's unchangeable, because if I'm going to go there, or if I am that, then I'll stay that, you know. But then how does one actually know that if this happened before, why wouldn't it happen again? You know, Brahman decided to have a pastime. You know?
Yeah.
So then, since it's eternal, this may have been going on eternally. You know, so then it's not as secure as one might think.
It's frightening.
Huh? Yeah. The world is false. What is the basis of Advaita Vada? After analyzing all the different objects of the material world and searching out their root, to minimize the numbers, they term them all as material. Right? Because remember, going back, the aspect of how reasoning works is after you take in the sensual, you know, information, then you have to reduce it down to one and categorize it. So because there's unlimited information in the material world, then they categorize it just as it's just material. Right? For the karmi, there's varieties of material. There's good material, bad material, you know, enjoyment material, practical material, planned material, knowledge material, and then you put that all together and then supposedly you're happy. But with the Advaita Vada, it's just all material. So you have that on one side and all your contemplations on the knowledge side. Is that what it says? Whatever conscious entities are observed are classed as sentient objects. Okay, so there's material and then there's sentient objects. That which observes the material and conscious objects is the operation of mind, and included in the power of reasoning. Right? So what do you say? It is the operation of the mind. So the mind's doing that, and it's included in the power of reasoning. So the power of reasoning, this whole thing of observing and doing all that. So that whole process, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, it's called reasoning. Mm-hmm. Bringing in the information, then reducing it, categorizing it, then expanding it to this options and all that, then choosing based on one's, you know, position. That whole process is called reason. Yes.
Do you know what the Mayavadi's position is on the 84 lakh species? I mean, if it's pastime, that would mean that you would enter into a stone or a tree or a fish as well.
Yeah, I don't
gradually
know. I think they kind of. I think that's why they like to term it all as material.
Yeah.
Because there's just too many questions. So they have a very simplified philosophy. I mean, it's like Buddhism. How complicated can it be? Right? And so all you're doing is taking that philosophy and putting it into Vedic terminology. Like that, your culture changes from the Buddhist culture to the Vedic culture.
Yeah.
But your philosophy is still Buddhism, that's only using Vedic terminology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, somehow or another, Buddhism gets into a lot of places. If you take Buddhism and you use Vaishnava, you know, terminology, you know, it means, or the tantric terminology gets Sahajayana, and then that's transformed into, you know, Gaudiya technology. I mean, terminology.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of Yeah, basically, it's they take up most of the world, these guys. Though it is not within the power of the mind to find the source of its own operation, they conclude after deliberation that material objects and the sentient beings must be situated in some root cause and attribute the cause to be Brahman. Right? So now, at this point, they have to infer. Because you don't have experience. It means you have experience with fire and smoke. So therefore, you can say when you see smoke, there's a fire on the mountain. But the problem is the mind can't tell what's beyond the material and the sentient beings. What is their root? Because the mind is you know part of the sentient being and it's made up of material. This is the connection there. So it can't know what's beyond. Right? So therefore, then they have to, how you say? What we use? Anuman. They have to use
inference.
Right? But the problem is the base of their inference, so they're using Shastra as the basis of the inference. So then they have to misinterpret it because they have to apply it as it is in their reason. Right? In other words, they're not going to Shastra and adjusting their reasoning with Shastra. They're adjusting Shastra to their reason. Right? And so then but you could say, no, but somebody came up with that, but that's Shankara. You know? Shankara or Buddha himself. They came up with it. So they gave that indication. And so then that just keeps the materialist busy. Because he never can actually get the answers, so it'll keep him off the street. You know? As yogurt is a transformation of milk, so the world is a transformation of Brahman. As shell is mistaken for silver, or as rope is mistaken for a snake, so the Brahman is mistaken for the world. Right? But, so yeah, shell for silver means, yeah, the shell for silver means, but the problem is you know what silver is. Right? But you just can't tell that the shell is not silver. You know what a snake is. You know what a rope is, but you can't tell it's a rope. You think it's a snake. But the point is there is a form. You know, there is some experience. So here, it's a nice example, but the problem is you don't have experience of Brahman to therefore make that mistake. Mm-hmm. You know, where is that inherent experience? Mm-hmm. So that's where they attribute their cause to Brahman. But they can't actually tell by their own mind, their own reasoning power, that it is Brahman. You know, they're just guessing. You know, educated guess, but still they're guessing. To come to this conclusion takes a lot of imagination and logical operations. But even so, the faults are obvious. If there is nothing except Brahman, why did the illusion of a world arise? Is a Brahman superior? Why would Brahman, like you say, why 8,400,000? Because the point is if Brahman was going to have some fun, okay, then at best, then why not the big demigods?
Yeah.
You know, everybody would be, you know, like, you know, Indra and Varuna and like that kind of facilities. Then you could say maybe there's some fun going. But, you know, the worm and stool, that's not exactly what you call fun. The hellish regions, you know, like that, you know, Patala. You know, why that's considered so great, you know. Raising the example of the rope and snake is unsuitable because if the rope represents Brahman, then the illusion that it is a snake can arise only if there exists another entity called snake. But if it's an illusion, then there's nothing to compare it to. So you can't. Advaita cannot answer this point and therefore fails. They don't answer because if you get to this and you said that, they would change the subject. You know, oh, it's just all one. Or you Vaishnavas can't understand. Or, you know, this is too elevated. They'll just brush it off. You know, those who are sincere might surrender, but it appears that all the sincere ones were caught by Lord Chaitanya. You know, what Ramanuja and Madhva didn't catch, then Lord Chaitanya caught. And then since that time, it's been a little... The example of the shell and silver has the same fault, right? Because you're taking shell as Brahman. It means, in other words, you're seeing the shell as silver, but it's not silver, it's just a shell. But the point is then there must be silver in the experience to actually do. So where does silver come from if there's only Brahman? So that means for the philosophy of work means there has to be Brahman and silver. So that means there has to be Brahman and illusion side by side.
Yeah.
You know, they have to eternally exist side by side. But, you know, it's not all one is equal. No, Brahman is superior to illusion. Mm. Right? And if those two exist, then why wouldn't the living entity exist? Because it's only said we don't exist because actually it's an illusion that there's anything other than Brahman. But if it was established there is other things than Brahman, then actually that means the jiva would exist. Otherwise, how you would observe it? You know, how would there be a shell and silver, but you don't exist, to observe them and to worry about it? You know, it's like you're talking to your, you know, you have some close friends and that, you know, I'm really disturbed, you know, because my non-existing unborn son is in anxiety about, you know, the family maintenance and, you know, how to take care of everything. And, you know, your friend, you know, might get a little worried at this point. You know, so nothing. Yeah. If Brahman transforms into the world like milk into yogurt, then the world must be real, as a yogurt is real, mm-hmm. right? Because you've taken real milk and transformed it by transformation, then it's also real.
Yeah.
Here also the Advaitavad cannot find support. Right? So even their Brahma Parinama, because in the other one then there's a problem, you have to establish it. So then you can say, okay, the illusion can't exist because there can only be one. So then Brahman has to transform. But if it transforms, then there isn't that idea of Brahman, it's untransformable.
Yeah.
So then that argument will come up. Then they'll go back to the Vivarta. So in other words, the answer to the problem with the weakness in Vikara, I mean in Vivarta, is Vikara. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, that this transformation. But then the weakness in there is answered by Vivarta. Right? So it's just a matter of what's in flavor.
Yeah.
So whoever's the strongest philosopher at the time will take it that direction. Mm-hmm. And then that'll go for some time because it's said the common person just follows whatever the scholars do. Opinions that learned scholars propound, the common people with no discrimination generally accept. So then amongst the scholars, whoever's the biggest one gives the best arguments, then it goes that way. But after a while, it'll be seen the weaknesses. So then, because you're going, after a while, the weaknesses, the consciousness of the weaknesses becomes more prominent than someone who can put that together very articulately. You know, once it's in a weakened position, then can take their philosophy to that. And then you take it the other way. You know, so whichever, all it is, it's always going to oscillate between these two. You know, and whether the jiva is a part or he's just illusion. You know, so those basically is those four, right? Is there something else? Basically, the philosophy, all these fancy terms, it all comes down to that. No? Did Brahman transform, or is just illusion? And is the living entity a piece of Brahman, or is he just a reflection of Brahman? Right, and so the reflection is off of illusion. So then it's a matter of whether it's Brahman is transformed into illusion and then reflects, and so you see the jiva. So then that means the Brahman has transformed, but the transformable one that can go into avidya is different from the Ishwara aspect of Brahman, which is vidya. So then that means then the avidya Brahman would have to be reflected onto the transformation of avidya Brahman as the material world. And then that reflection is the jiva. You know, but why would he get the jiva? You would think he'd just see himself. Brahman would just, because, you know, unless.
Well, Hindu Thakur mentions there's another one called jiva vibe, but I don't know. I don't think we've encountered it in the books specifically.
Oh, but he doesn't.
Not in this text.
Oh, but I mean, I don't know, but you have those ones about the jiva is the one who creates the illusion. Because there's illusion, but they don't explain how illusion. The explanation, remember before, was that the illusion is the illusion of the living entity. But to be an illusion, he has to be under illusion. So, which was first? You know, was the jiva first or was the illusion first? If the jiva's first, why would he come under illusion? Mm-hmm. Because the illusion is his creation. Mm-hmm. You know, then it's just the same thing. Is it Brahma Parinamabad? Mm-hmm. Or is it basically the jiva has created this? Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so then you throw another little quirk in the mix. So, like that, you can take these, and then how you put them together, then you get all your different philosophy. Everybody will fit into this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At some place. Okay. The world must be real, as the yogurt is real. Here also the Advaita Vada cannot find support. All the examples which Advaita philosophy raises are contrary to logic. Logic fails to establish it. If logic is disregarded, what can confirm that philosophy? Right, especially if they call it a philosophy, it's supposed to be logical. Right? That was what was the funny point was made in the morning. That devotee was saying is that they present themselves as so intellectual, but actually their basis for being involved in it and the conclusion is totally, you know, emotional.
Well, don't they write off this question of logic through saying that since it's beyond the material world, it's also beyond mundane?
Well, yes, well, that's great. Then stop talking. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is that if it is beyond, then why are they talking? Yeah. Because as Prabhupada points out, a real Brahmavadi does not preach.
Yeah.
If they're preaching, then they have to be a Mayavadi. Because a Brahmavadi would never. Brahmavadi, it's all Brahman. So what's to preach to?
Yeah.
Everybody's already Brahman. You don't have to make them into Brahman. They already exist as Brahman.
Yeah. And so why should we prefer that merging into Brahman versus separation from Brahman if it's just the same?
Yeah, and there'd be no need to. It means you're already Brahman. So whether you're merged or separate, you're still Brahman. So there's no need. In other words, the situation they're in, they're just satisfied. You know? Like that. So that's real detachment. It's not you're giving something up. Because, you know, what's the big... I'm giving up illusion. You know what I'm saying? You know, you go down to the insane asylum, and then like the guy says with great conviction... They call in, you know, he wants to see all the doctors and psychiatrists and all that. So they all gather in the thing. And then he stands up and says, I renounce this concept that I'm, you know, I mean, I renounce my position as Napoleon Bonaparte. Like that, you know, no longer, you know, like that. And the point is this, you know, what do you mean? You were never Napoleon to begin with. You know? You know, so that's the... Yeah. If someone replies that common sense is the support, that is also impossible, because by common sense, difference was perceived. Yeah. But that was negated by use of logic. Mm-hmm. Right? So again, they go back in a circle. You know, just as the jiva, it's illusion that they exist, it's covered Brahman. But where does illusion come from? It comes by the covered jiva. Mm-hmm. So he can only exist if he's been covered, but that covering doesn't exist until he imagines it. So they contradict each other. So here is common sense is you can say common sense is the support. It's just obvious. Mm-hmm. But you've already thrown out common sense with logic. And then you come to the end of the line, logic can't prove it. And now you're going to say common sense proves it? You can't do that. It's not possible. You can't, in a court of law, you have to stick to one or the other. You can't take them both. It's just whichever one works at the time, that's the one you...
Yeah.
It's not... I'm not sure. I'm sure that there's a technical legal term for that. But in any case... If someone replies that the Vedas support this teaching, that is also unacceptable, because in every scripture they use to support their cause, along with statements supporting their Advaita, are statements supporting the opposite, Dvaita. Right? So that's the point. They only take what they want from the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This means that in the scriptures there are support for the two aspects.
Because both aspects are there. Bhagavan is there and Brahman is there. So, of course, Shastra will deal with both. They don't have the discrimination to tell the difference. So they've taken everything as one, so then these other ones have to be some part of the oneness. But that's where then the logic fails, because how do you create this multiplicity out of oneness if oneness is undividable? You know? So it doesn't work. You know, and then what's the size of this illusion? Because they're saying that everything's Brahman. But let us just take, like before I was saying, scary. You know, we want to get more scary here. What if we're taking that the jivas are separated parts of Brahman, what if all the sky is in pots? Right? All the sky is in pots. So that means... Technically, if you break the one pot, it doesn't merge back into the sky because all the rest of the sky is in pots. So it still remains the same amount of sky, just without a pot now. But, you know, fortunately it appears that the unembodied don't have a problem with going to the bathroom, so that they don't have a pot, they don't have a problem. Right? Yeah. So he says, no. What if that's there? And so then you have to wait for at least a few more to break the pots so that they can at least have something to merge into? Mm-hmm. What about that? That gets another scary scenario, right? And then even they all break the pots and all that, but then because it's pastimes of Brahman, then he decides to, you know, then transform into illusion, create all the whatever it is like that, and then here we go again. You know, so it's not eternal. So it can get pretty absurd. You could really have some real good fun with some guys, you know, doing this stuff. No, completely twist their head around the backwards. But they shouldn't worry because there is no head. There is no frontwards or backwards.
Reminds me of a story. You know, Prabhupada used to say. Sometimes you use the analogy, you have one piece of paper and you rip it up into pieces and make confetti out of it, then the original paper is gone.
Yes.
And so he says, well, why that analogy? Why not use the analogy of a father? And he can expand himself into so many, you know, multiple expansions,
yes,
by having sons, but he remains the same as he is.
Yes.
So why choose that analogy?
Yeah, why choose that one? Yes. Is it because the point is we see everything that expands by the one, the father thing.
Yeah.
But they just take it, well... Because I can't understand the spiritual, it's beyond. Therefore, because my mind and intelligence can understand, you know, form and feelings and activities and individuality and, you know, all this, therefore it must be beyond, so it doesn't have any of these.
Yeah.
So therefore, but if it doesn't have any of these, we would consider it a fault, ripping up the paper and then the paper's gone. We would consider it a superior position. So why would the inferior position here be the superior there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then, interesting in that, because if you rip up the pieces of paper, then it's, because that's why I was asking if there's a connection, because basically if you're using Brahma Parinamavad, then Brahman has to be the jivas and Brahman has to be the illusion. So the two would have to go together. Yeah. Right? And so then the vikara, you know, and that, what was it? Paricheda?
Paricheda is the cutting.
That seems to go together.
Yeah.
Well, then the vada, and what was the other one?
Pratibimba.
Is reflection goes together because it's not actually there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because the one, the world is real.
Yeah.
Though your view is illusory, but the jivas are real, but in that position they're under the influence of the illusion, so they're not actually seeing things as they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then the problem comes is then, yeah, why Brahman? How do you transform and not know who you are? You know. You know, you can still find the qualities of milk. It's just like,
yeah,
in yogurt. Yeah. You know. Then if you get into the thing is that then what's the natural position? We take this. That the man can expand and have however many sons.
Mm-hmm.
But how does he do that? How does he transform into sons? Because it's not him that's being transformed. It's not like a Frankenstein kind of thing, you know. You know what I'm saying?
The principle of having female energy.
Yes. So it means actually the real point is Shakti Parinama.
Yeah.
That's the only actually viable explanation. That makes sense here. And it works for explaining. That works according to common sense and according to logic. So that means you can explain in detail to the intellectual, he'll understand it, and to the common person with common sense. So that makes it universal. While the other one, it doesn't work for either because everything is opposing. And, you know, the weaknesses in common sense, you take up the slack by saying logic, but then the weaknesses in logic, you say, no, it's common sense. You know, so it doesn't... Logic failed. Okay, with common sense as well. In coming to a proper conclusion, there should be no prejudice to either side. Right? In other words, you don't have a prejudice to Dwait, you don't have a prejudice to Advait. Because the point is everything is Krishna. He's a non-dual entity. There's not him and something else. There's only him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that is the Advaita aspect. But the Dwaita is, but he is expanded into so many, all that him, his energy, his own expansions, his energies, all the different things. So there is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Though he's conscious of everything, but the other living entities are only conscious of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they've accepted the common sense element of the mind can't know what's beyond, can't know its source. So in the same way, a particular aspect of Brahman can't know its source. So unless that's revealed, then only you can know. Yeah. You know, just like Balaram, you know, Bhosbi knows he knows everything from him on down, but he doesn't know Krishna.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, you take an expansion of Radharani, they know their position on down, but they don't know Radharani.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
And we're kind of at the bottom, so we don't really know anything from the others.
Beetle.
Yeah.
We know our children.
Yeah. And then, to quote from a great, you know, how you say, a great celebrity, SpongeBob, and his point is, who cares? Right? No. So, in coming to a proper conclusion, there should be no prejudice to either side. Therefore, considering all things carefully, All the Vedic scriptures that seem to teach the concept of inconceivable difference and non-difference, which transcends both Advaita and extreme Dvaita positions. Now, this is something, just personally, I've been waiting for that sentence now for a long time. Because there always comes up the question is, okay, we're a Chinta Beda Veda Tattva. So how do we say that it is the, you know, on one level, the superior philosophy of all the Vaishnava philosophies? You know, why is it it answers everything else rather than we're just a option? But this answers it, because every other, though they're within the proper, Vaishnava consideration, still they're taking too much on one side or too much on the other, or they're not seeing the simultaneous oneness of. Mm-hmm. Right? So a Dvait, definitely. So that's too far. Mm-hmm. But Dvait also is too far the other way. So there's things that become difficult to answer. Mm-hmm. Right? But on the platform of Vaikuntha, then they'll work. Mm-hmm. Right? So then, yes.
So what is an example of extreme dualism, extreme Dvaita? Like who propounds this?
That Madhva. Anything to do with oneness, he just doesn't accept. Right. Because, see, he's coming after Ramanuja, so the Madhva, the Maya bodies that didn't get converted by Ramanuja, then they're really tough, stubborn nuts. Yeah. So you can't leave any, you know, it's just like, let's say, someone is into sense gratification. So if you can get any example where someone in history actually engaged in that, you say, see here, it's bona fide. Though, your position, their position, the context in which it's used and their understanding are totally, mm-hmm. you know, not the same. But you'll take that. So, therefore, the Maya bodies will take, if there's any kind of oneness allowed anywhere,
yeah.
then they'll just take that and expand from there.
Yeah.
So he doesn't leave, you know, the amount of, you know, space, you know, on the prick of a pin, let alone the head, mm-hmm. you know. So it just doesn't leave anything. So okay. So that way then you can just finish off
okay.
the line.
Right.
So it'll have problems in certain areas. I don't remember them right now. But the point is they don't become a problem for functioning in the spiritual world. Because there you don't worry about all the philosophical elements so much. Mm-hmm. Right? So then it'll work. Because the point is God's a person eternally, I'm a person eternally, and you know, and that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm servant of God. So there's nothing wrong with the fundamentals of that philosophy. Mm-hmm. You know, because in the spiritual world you're not worried about other aspects. But in Vaikuntha it's always going to be master and servant. Mm-hmm. Right. But now, if you're going to accept that God has come in the mood of his devotee,
right.
how are you going to function in the Lord Chaitanya aspect?
Right.
So, therefore, if you go into Goloka, then this will have a weakness. Yes. Or if it's the oneness, you know, in Vishishta Dvaita, Vishuddha Dvaita, it works fine in Vaikuntha because it's just I have the mood, you know, proper mood of service, or you know, the position of the transcendental position of the living entity in the Lord. You know, in other words, that aspect of oneness creates the common ground.
Yeah.
I'm transcendental, he's transcendental, therefore, and he's big transcendental, I'm small, I serve the big transcendental. Or the mood is there, so it's God's mood is the big, and we're small, we can fit in there, we bring our mood in line with his mood, then the service goes on. It works fine in Vaikuntha. You know, I mean, yeah. the fundamentals of it work everywhere else, but the thing is if the situation changes, how does Mother Jashoda feel herself, in one sense, superior to her son, in that she can chastise him? She's chasing with the stick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chasing God.
Yeah.
Right? Vaikuntha, that's not going to fly.
Which is conjugal Ras.
Yeah, the conjugal Ras. And
really because it said there's a oneness between, you know,
yes.
they become one in desire and then they're surrendering.
Yeah. So Ramanuja would take that at the same time as that it becomes a little bit a little bit of a problem, because then at the same time it's not always like that. Then Krishna says something, you know, that the gopis don't, Radharani didn't like, and kicks them out. So it would be fine as long as that oneness is there, but then she kicks them out. Lakshmi doesn't kick Narayan out. So therefore, it's all, you know, that oneness. Her service of the Lord there and being in line with Lakshmi. So it's all, you know, that purified state of oneness or that, you know, special state of oneness. But here, it's, a difference is made. You know, you're a debauchee. Get out of here. You know? So it runs into problems.
Right.
You know, and then you have the Dwait Advait, so that gets you farther into Golok.
Yeah.
But then the problem is because you can only see one or the other. You can't see them both at once, so they're very intimate things where there is that oneness and difference.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not going to be able to be part of.
So we find in our mind there's such a richness in pastimes, such a variety of different, you know, scenarios. Do you find like similar leelas in Vaikuntha? That kind of, you
know? No, I don't. I haven't heard of that there. Uh-huh. Means it doesn't. The point is for someone in that mood, they'll be fully satisfied. It's not that anything's missing.
Right.
But that's one aspect, right? You know, the other aspect is it's not that they're not privy to Vrindavan pastimes in Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
It's just that their Lord is so great. You know. Yes. They're just thinking, my Lord is so great, because the whole thing is about his greatness, that he even has these very nice, simple, sweet yeah. pastimes in Vrindavan that are so attractive to the mind.
Yeah.
So it's not that the Shris and the Madhvas don't appreciate or read Vrindavan pastimes. Mm-hmm. They just think it's Vishnu's doing this.
Yeah.
So they can't. So they still have that mood of awe and reverence.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like that. Just it's a sweeter side. There are those in those lines that are exclusively absorbed in those pastimes,
mm-hmm.
and no one has a problem with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because ultimately it comes back to Vishnu Supreme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this one sentence here then establishes, you know, the Chintabheda Veda Tattva. Okay. So in coming to a proper conclusion, there can be no prejudice to either side. Therefore, considering all things carefully, all the Vedic scriptures seem to teach the concept of inconceivable difference and non-difference, which transcends both the Dvaita and extreme Dvaita positions. Statements to support both opinions are present in scripture in order to appease the quarreling parties. But absolute monism or extreme Advaita is not the final conclusion of the Vedas. The Vedas, right, so but extreme Dvaita, at least it's within the Vaishnava
right.
line.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but the extreme Advaita, that's just, you know, that's just untenable.
Mm-hmm.
The Vedas, being the incarnation of pure knowledge, are impartial. They do not support dogmatism. Neither common sense, Vedic scripture, logic, normal experience, realization, sense perception, or inference supports Advaita Vada. It doesn't really leave them a lot, does it? The other, you know, unless they take shelter in SpongeBob. The only support is erroneous logic and misplaced faith. So that's their only support. Okay, so we'll stop there. And then continue on Thursday. Then.
Thursday.
Yeah, this is 66, so this is the last page, and then we go into the...
Part 2.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you have part 2, Maharaj?
No, I do not. I only have the last page.
Okay.
66.
I thought I slipped in. Maybe I didn't.
Oh, here it is.
Okay.
So we have part 2.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And this goes, and this is the complete part 2, or this is
no,
just part of part 2?
No, this is part 1 of part 2.
Huh?
Part 1 of part 2.
Part 1 of, so this is 2.1. Okay. So this is 5, how many pages are there?
There's 3 more, I can give those to you right now. But the entire section, well it depends, now that I'm cutting out Chaitanya Shikshamrita, it'll be another, like, approximately 15 pages.
Okay. Okay. So what you can do is that, but if there's essential quotes from Shikshamrita that will support it,
yeah, there's some of it.
But you don't have to put the full thing so you get the full study, because yeah, that should come into, in other words, whatever is, you know, you feel of essence,
yeah,
to study from the Shikshamrita, then yeah, put that in so that we.
Yeah, otherwise it'll go in the first class.
Sorry?
It'll go in the first class, the 7 a.m. class we'll start doing Chaitanya Shikshamrita starting Thursday.
But, wait.
Yeah.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying here.
Yes.
Oops. I didn't read this. Oh, I could have done a good one. He was saying here. In coming to a proper conclusion, there should be no prejudice to either side. That's the basis, right?
Yes.
So now you're saying one class is first class and one class is second class. But that would appear to be that there's some kind of prejudice, yes, or bias here.
You're the reconciling factor, Marsh, that they're equally nectar, because no matter which class we're studying, we have your association.
Oh, okay. So it's sweet, not that the morning one is first class because it's not as hot, and the second one is, the evening one is second class because it is more hot. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. See, in other words, enough to explain the concept should be there.
Yeah.
In the Tattva Vidya.